Hi, I'm Robert, and this is second episode of the Rails Refactoring podcast. Hi, Andre.
Hi, I'm Andrzej Krzywda. Hi.
And today we wanted to talk about RailsWay, Rails DNA, and the history of our community. Are you ready, Andrzej?
Yeah, sure. Those are my favorite topics. Okay, let's start with the RailsWay. I think it's something that I was really talking a lot recently. I've had my talk at the Białystok Ruby user group, and I was talking to many people about what the RailsWay means to them, and I was trying to define it. So maybe before I start with my definitions, I'm also wondering what are your thoughts on the RailsWay, what it means for you, how do you see the importance of it in our community?
Well, I clearly don't have any good definition of what RailsWay is, just a feeling. And I would say that RailsWay is something that is taught by the official books regarding Rails, like the Agile Web Development with Rails. That's like classic definition of RailsWay. It's like things that they don't show there, it's not RailsWay for me.
Okay, that's an interesting definition. So yeah, I think the early books they had a huge impact on how we work on Rails projects, especially the Agile Web Development with Rails. That was very important. For me, the RailsWay, the definition of the RailsWay, it changed over time. And I think at the beginning when we started with doing Rails, for me it was 2004. There was no such concept yet. I think it was born somewhere in 2007, 2008, and it was the combination of all of the things that we have in the Rails framework itself, plus the additional things that people built around the Rails core. So the most popular Ruby gems or Rails gems or Rails plugins, as they were at the beginning, and the whole active record way of thinking with all the good sides and with all the bad sides. So I think that's those things make the RailsWay for me.
And how you feel about RailsWay right now after that many years?
I think my opinion kind of stabilized over time. So it's obviously cool to be either a huge fan or be totally against. But I think in this case, there is the RailsWay has some place for certain projects, while at some point I think the RailsWay is simply bad for your projects. So I think the RailsWay is good for the less experienced developers, because it's a very precise framework of thinking. It's not only a technical framework, it's also a framework of thinking. And it's much easier for the beginners, for the newbies in our community, to embrace this way of thinking, this framework, and start with that. So, and technically speaking, and from looking at the requirements, all of those smallish applications, they usually are fine with the RailsWay, and mostly the CRUD-like applications. So all of those applications where you have a table with rows and columns. So more or less, it's basically bring the data from the database and put it on the web site and maybe add some email notifications and so on. However, at some point of time in the project, I define it somewhere in the second or third month of development. You need to be careful with the RailsWay. It depends on the project, of course. So I think at the beginning, it might be good for people to start with the RailsWay rules. But then you need to really know what you're doing, because otherwise you're risking to end up in a situation where your project is very hard to maintain.
I'm not sure if I would put the border like that way, like 3 or 2 months. It's kind of hard for me to think about it like that. I would be more inclined to say maybe you can even go 1 or 2 years with RailsWay without being much problematic. without taking too much technical depth, I think, to validate your idea, but you need to be careful, like careful not to overdose active record-based programming. And I mean, so now that we, like you said, like for example, for less experienced developer, maybe junior developers, Railsway is good. But even like for everyone in Rails community, even if you don't always follow Railsway, I think you need to be really good at least knowing it and be like efficient at reading it, because sooner or later you are going to join a product which was like managed that way and built that way, and you need to be able to read the code to modify and to know when you should keep it the Rails way because it's simple, and when you should start actively going out from it, like knowing that these things are getting too complicated, not enough explicit, and maybe the features no longer work together very well because of very high coupling, and you need to start doing active work to have less Rails magic and less Railsway, I think.
Yeah, so those are good points. So let me actually try to precise definition of the Railsway as I did it recently. So basically, it's I see Railsway as a scaffold-like controllers and views. Not the same. Not it doesn't mean it was scaffolded, but it looks very similar. It's all resource-oriented, and then you have this thing that active record is everywhere. So you take the object from the database, it's made an active record object, and then it goes through the controller and it goes to the view. So you have the same instance of the object everywhere. So by definition, the class will contain lots of logic from different layers of the applications. So it's like the active record everywhere. And then for those non-trivial features that most of the applications have, you use a combination of callbacks, filters, state machine validations, and those are things that for me are really about the Railsway. And then you have this feature of many Rails applications that it's almost always a one monolithic application. You don't really see a separation into components, into modules. It's very, very rare because it's so difficult. And the last thing is the combination of what we usually call the Rails magic. And I think it's a combination of the following rules: convention over configuration, because then you try to hide certain things behind the conventions, relying on metaprogramming. We can see a lot of it in Rails, like relying on something being a string, and then we derive from the string to find the class somehow. And then we have this rule, don't repeat yourself, which I think in our community was a bit taken too far. And sometimes it's okay to duplicate some concepts. Sometimes it's okay to have code duplication. Sometimes it's better to have code duplication than have code coupling, as you said before. So those things define the Railsway to me. And going back from those things may help you work on bigger Rails projects, I think.
Yeah, that would be my feeling as well. But how do you think Rails as a framework and Railsway as a way of coding applications play with like what you called some time ago the rise of single page applications, like whether done by, I don't know, Flux, Facebook, React.js, Angular, Ember, whatever. I mean, do you think like because we are teaching people like to use Active Record from database to controllers to views like from top to bottom, and I kind of feel like single page applications are not that easy to go in Rails way. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, so I think the rise of the single page applications, they're partially good for the architecture of Rails apps because they force us to separate the view layer to be a separate application now. So at least now we have some part of the Rails being, modularized. I'm really sad when I see a single page application where it all relies on the same attributes and the same magic as it goes from the active record from the database to the controller through JSON, and then the JSON is magically unpacked into the view models somewhere in some kind of JavaScript framework. So this makes me sad because then we don't really take advantage of the whole situation. So, but I've seen many good ways of separating the single page applications from the Rails, and overall, I think it's a step into a good direction because you make a better isolation of things. You can have, and we already have such projects, right? You can have a different team working on the front end, different team working on the back end. I'm not saying this is always good, but at least it's possible. So if you want it, you can have it. While if you have a Rails application, it's not that easy to say, well, those people work on views and those people work on controllers and models. It's not as easy because the isolation is not so strict, right?
Yeah, exactly. So something that I'm missing in RaceWay, is what would be the RaceWay of doing single page applications, and what would be the other approaches, like architectural, like Flux or Hexagonal JS for doing the front end. I think that's like at the time that Rails became popular, it wasn't that often to have like full single page application. We did have JavaScript, and first it was RJS, and then it was like jQuery based all the time. In between there was prototype, but nothing gained so much traction to have the most used part. Like the Rails way of doing things is like the most common way in Rails community, but we don't have like the any most popular option for doing it when you go with single page applications.
Yeah, that's something very interesting here. So the state of the JavaScript applications, how we're going to build them. So at some point it was the backbone was, the most popular framework. Then we've had the rise of the Ember JS, and then we've seen Angular being extremely popular. Now Angular gets some hate because of some decisions they made to not to be compatible, backwards compatible. And now we see it's very popular in our team, right? The whole React.js approach, which is nice because it's only about the views and you can still keep the architecture as you want. But then you keep the architecture as you want and people are confused. So how do we keep the architecture? So this probably was what you're asking for. What is the, the JS way? What is the Rails way here? What are the rules we need to follow? And people are lost. People are confused because there are no rules to follow. Like there is too much freedom. And that's interesting for me because I was advocating the hexagonal JS approach, which basically is a set of rules, but there is no code behind it. We just said, okay, if you want to have a structured application, you can have the use case in the core, and then you can have as adapters around it. So we followed the hexagonal architecture, but we didn't really deliver any code to the people. So we just said that there are some rules. And if I'm faced with a single page application nowadays, this is still the approach I would like to take. So I want to go with the hexagonal way because they help me understand what are the things. Those are use cases, those are adapters. So I don't really need a real framework for it. It's just a framework of thinking. And I find it interesting that people try to jump from a framework to another framework, meaning the framework which gives you some code like Angular, Ember, and even React with the Flux probably approach. So I find it interesting that people feel the need to use those kinds of frameworks.
Yeah, but Flux is like two things. It's like the way of doing applications, and then there are various libraries helping you implement the Flux way, the dispatchers, and things like that. Okay, but we've been talking for 15 minutes about RaceWay, and I really wanted to talk a little bit more also about Rails DNA and what was the thing that brought you into Rails from whenever whatever you were before.
Okay, so for me that was 2000. I remember it exactly. Learning about the existence of Rails kind of changed my life. So I still remember those days. I was working. So I was mostly a Java developer, but exactly in October 2004, I was working on a .NET application, so ASP.NET, and I was working on a typical CRUD application. So when I found Rails, and I think I found it through the blog of one of the pragmatic programmers. And I found it, I downloaded it, and then I started to play with it in the evenings, and I started implementing some simple applications, and I felt in love immediately. So it was great. The language was great. The whole I really loved the fact that DHH as the as the leader of the we didn't know it would be a community in the future, but as a leader he was very opinionated, and his opinions I liked his opinions at that point. I still agree with many opinions of DHH. So I really enjoyed working with Rails, and I kind of I immediately knew this was a thing, and I knew that this will be something happening. So I felt lucky that I was part of this thing from the beginning. And I remember times to early 2005 when I was at a conference where DHH was speaking about Rails. And no one knew DHH, no one knew Rails, and people basically ignored him. So it was a chance for me to have like 2 hours and a beer with DHH, because he wasn't as a celebrity as he is right now. So it was so easy to just to talk to him, and so that was the beginning with Rails for me. And I'm still happy that I jumped into Rails. And I'm still enjoying it. And
Yeah.
what was your case? How did you start?
I think it was at the university. I was studying at that time, and I read a book that was about other languages that could enter the scene after Java. So it was like, what else can we have instead of Java? And Ruby was one of the languages mentioned there, and I really like the syntax. I still love Ruby syntax every day. It totally makes me happy. And then I read about Rails, and I wanted to jump into it, and I hit a wall. I couldn't understand Rails. You write in Active Record has meant something, and I couldn't understand how is that working. And then so I had to give a break from Rails to actually learn Ruby good enough to go back to Rails and be able to understand the code and to be able to enjoy it. Because you can keep using Rails, like writing has many associations, belongs to attitude accessor, whatever. And it kind of works, right? But you kind of start to enjoy it. You see the beauty of it when you know that under the hood, it's like evaluating the code. It's not compiling. It's dynamically evaluating the code while loading the class definition. And there is whole metaprogramming under the hood. And it like blows off your mind. It's like, wow, it's so cool. It's so nice. And I fell in love with that. And the strongest thing for me to come into Ruby was the promise of testing, that we value testing. We want things to be tested. And when we don't know how to test things, we don't feel comfortable with that, and we learn how to do it well. And I still I'm not that good with JavaScript testing, at least not as good as I'm with Ruby testing, with the frameworks, approaches, techniques, and just being fluent with that. But even though I keep writing JavaScript code or coffee code, I want to be good at testing it, because that's part of my DNA. That's something that I wouldn't trade off for anything. And I don't know, maybe TDD and other testing techniques were popular in some circles before Ruby, before Rails. Maybe they were, but from how I perceive things, these things actually started to be popular after Rails. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was a bit more complicated because, going back to the whole DNA of our community, when Rails started, we've had this situation that that people from other technologies, from other communities, they switched to Rails. So they started creating this new community, and it was all new. So we were, you know, many different early adopters of this technology, and people had to switch from something. And I think the fact from where you were at the beginning, so I was, for example, coming from Java, I think it kind of defined the way I was thinking about Rails. And some other people were switching from PHP, other people from .NET, from Microsoft technologies. So I think we were trying to find different things in Rails. And I think we kind of were shaping the community as we were doing our best, right, to see it. So I think Ruby was about the elegant language. It was about, I think the agile movement was also very connected to the Ruby and Rails community as well from the beginning. So many agile Java people switched to Rails very early. So TDD was also part of that. And I think TDD and testing was also part of our community. And I think if there is one thing that was really keeping the Rails community together, it was testing. So I agree with you that I think many people were brought to Ruby because of testing, because of the way the community embraced testing. It's I think many different things were happening in our community over the last 10 years, but the importance of testing was never really, I don't know, damaged or trying to be, no one really said it's not important. Even the last drama about TDD being dead or not dead, it was about TDD, whether you should write your test first and so on. So it wasn't about test not being important. So the importance of test was always our DNA here.
Yeah, and like, I have a funny story because in one of our projects, I started using Rails 3 before it was actually really stable. And at that time, Aaron Patterson had a rule that if you find a regression in the beta version, unreleased version of new Rails that they wanted to release, you could veto the process. And I did it like once or twice, and I felt really bad because I was like, you know, stopping the release of the product. But in the end, it felt really powerful that if I found a bug, like a regression that wasn't in previous version and it's now, and if I could prove it, then someone could actually make a test case for that Rails was missing, so they are never gonna break it again. And then, you know, delay these things a little bit to get bug that I experiencing in my application fixed before the new release. And I must say, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that was great. We can also cover what we don't like about Rails DNA. Yeah, because there is one thing that was always irritating me for all the years, and that was the fact that the part of creating the Rails community was, as I said, people switching from other technologies, and there was this kind of Java hate from the beginning. I think it was partially because the way DHH framed the whole story, how he started with Rails. So he tried Java, it was too generic, and you know, he mentioned something about the architecture astronauts, I think. And then he tried PHP, but that was very unstructured. So he kind of framed where we are as a community. So we are somewhere between Java and PHP. So we are not as generic as Java, but we are more structured than PHP. And at some point it turned into, you know, bashing Java for anything without any really rational reasons. And that was something I really I disliked for always, because whenever you try to bring up some new interesting ideas to the Rails applications, like some maybe DDD influenced techniques and so on, people were saying like, oh no, this sounds like Java, I don't want it here. And it was always like part of the Rails community, it's still there, and I still kind of disagree with this approach. So I can't really do anything about that, but it's just, is it keeps irritating me that this is part of who we are and where we are.
I can totally feel the pain. I think that people need to like pay attention and learn to whether you want to use something as part of big application, a complicated project, or something simple. You are not gonna use thousand complicated techniques for simple things. So embrace the simplicity of simple things, but at the same time, maybe it forgot to embrace that you need a bit of more complicated stuff for the more complicated cases, more complicated applications. Like it's good that I like to say that it's good that simple things are simple, but I also want hard things to be possible.
Yeah, you put it very nicely here. Yeah, Rails really deals very well with all the simple things. So Rails keeps all the simple things simple. Well, I think that at some point the Rails way, as we said before, is kind of limiting to us. And I'm a bit sad that we as a community we totally missed the whole DDD movement. So it happened in the Java community, it happened in the .NET community. They are very heavily influenced by that, by those techniques. And we don't really see, well, we didn't see it really that much in the Rails community. And those are the techniques that you may be able to gradually to switch from your Rails way in some parts of the application. So it's very easily possible to mix the Rails way with those DDD techniques. And I think we're starting to see it. So in the first episode, we were talking about those gems for service objects and whether you need them or not. And so the service objects start to appear as a thing. And right now, I feel like many people do it. And then we have those, I don't know, form objects and presenters. And I still don't see that often the repository pattern. But I think something is happening here, and I'm happy that I can also be part of this, someone who can help bring some more interesting techniques to the Rails community.
By writing the book, right?
Yeah, I mean writing the book and by being at conferences about that. So the book, for those of you who don't know about it, we are, well, you also wrote some chapters, Robert. Thank you for your help. It's a book about improving your Rails controllers, but in fact, it's about introducing many DDD influenced techniques to your Rails applications, step by step, in a very safe way, in a very precise, with using very precise algorithms with many different edge cases and warnings being described. So this is what we are working on for almost a year now, right? So it took us a while. I'm really happy that we are shipping next week, and the 1.0 release it's going to be available on Monday. So that's great. But the book is just part of the story. It's more about also showing by example. So we introduced those techniques in many different projects, and we shared those techniques on our blog posts, and we talked to many people about that. And we are not the only ones. There are many people who do the same. Like, I'm really happy with what Apotonik does with his Trailblazer gem. I'm really happy what we were all involved in the Wrocław RB conference and how many interesting ideas came from this conference, right? From the first three editions so far. And the fourth editions also seems, I think, would be great as well. So in many ways, many people, put some value into enriching our Rails application, and I think that's great.
And Apotonik of the Trailblazer GAM is going to be speaking at the conference, right?
Yeah. So we have Apotonik speaking at the conference this year. We have Luca from Lotus, which is another interesting framework from a good alternative to Rails. So we'll have both of them speaking at the conference. We'll have some new speakers to announce very soon. So this will be another very good conference, I believe, where we can introduce some new ideas and we can help with big Rails applications in an easier way.
Okay, but going to Rails for a moment, I remember that it was told at some point that Rails was like optimized for creating applications that display a document-like structure, like the thing that you see is about a document. And like you remember that? And I think what people are trying to do now with Rails, I mean, it's happening all the time, but over time, the applications get more and more and more complicated. It's like at the beginning, it was these document-based applications, and now it's like completely read applications, single-page applications, very complicated flows, very complicated editors, complicated use cases. And I think maybe that might be the reason why we might need to go a little beyond the classic Rails way into at least few other techniques to be able to handle that switch better into better, more complicated, bigger Rails applications that wasn't there at the beginning.
Yeah, so I think that the whole document metaphor was very unfortunate. And for obvious small applications, yes, those are documents on the website. But I never really felt comfortable with the whole document metaphor. So as programmers, we are modeling some part of the real world, usually some kind of business processes. And business processes, yes, they are a bit about documents, but not in the documents meaning websites. They are about business processes being modeled in a way where you have to switch from one state to another state, which you have different many different roles of people being involved. And I'm not talking only about the enterprise like software or applications, but basically every application is in a way modeling something very non-trivial. So I don't look at Facebook. It's not really very trivial, right? It's not about documents for me. It's about people interacting with each other. There are different states of different conversations, and whichever applications you take, it's really not a document. So I'm not. I was never happy with the whole document metaphor, and I think that was partially the reason why we are limited with some of the techniques right now, because we or maybe I don't know, the HH was believing that this is all about documents. I think Turbo Links is one result of looking at this as a document, so everything in the document. Turbo Links is a great example where it all went, for me, it all went wrong, totally wrong.
Yeah, and one of the things that differentiates like documents and long-running processes is I think how you perceive, how you think, how you set the attributes. In documents, you just set attributes, and in long-running processes, you make like state changes, which you want to have very explicit. You handle business events. It's kind of different world.
Yeah. And my role at our company is often with their Rails applications, and they want us to help finish those applications. And the number of times I saw this situation that they are coming to me and they say, we have this Rails application, our team did that, and I look at the code and I see the Rails way, obviously. And then they say, this is like 95% finished. So please, could you just help us and finish it? And it's always the same pattern, and I see at the code and I see at the bugs that are need to be fixed or the features missing, and those are always the things that are using the non-trivial ones, so like the long living processes and maintaining the state. And it's always like for them it's like 5% of the application is missing, and for me it's like, dude, you have like no application yet. There is like 50% maybe. You just did the views and there is the whole logic is not implemented yet. So sorry, this will take some time.
Okay, I think we are running a little bit out of our usual time, so it's time to finish this conversation. Yeah, I think it was a good talking to you, and I'm totally sure that we are gonna talk about Rails way and the DNA of our framework, of our culture, more in future episodes.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Thank you for talking to me.
Bye, Andrei.
Bye.